You're listening to Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody. This is Ian Beckles, and welcome back to In the Trenches. This is my podcast that we talk predominantly football. And first of all, I want to give love to our title sponsor, Hess Spinal Centers. They provide the best medical care for you and your family in this tough time when you go through an accident. There's 16 locations in the area. 1-800-618-HESS. Don't stress. Call Hess. That's my people. 1-800-618-HESS. Now, in the trenches, it's usually me and myself and I talking football about breaking down the Bucs game or the Super Bowl. When there's not a football game happening, in the Pro Bowl I don't count. When there's not a game happening, we have to figure out things to talk about. Although football happens year-round, there's still a lot of things happening at One Buc Place with free agency around the corner with the combine. I like him to bring in some mates that know quite a bit about the game themselves. So I brought in Mr. Mark Cook. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man.
PewterReport.com. Now, Pewter Report used to be a magazine. It is no longer.
Believe it or not, it was actually owned originally by Hugh Culverhouse, I believe.
It was a product put out by Buccaneer
Magazine. And then it was sold and became an independent publication. Put out a weekly magazine for a long time. Like everything else, cost of print and those kind of things and things like that went down. And we were really the first Buccaneer, you know, coverage thing to go digital. And a lot of people told us we were crazy. It's never going to work. And it wasn't easy. But, you know, here we are going on almost 10 years. And now everybody's online, right? I mean, that's the way are getting their news today.
Yeah, there's not much in print anymore. And I used to write for Buccaneer Magazine way back when. I gave Scott Reynolds a bunch of shit one year because I'd never been on the cover. And I'd started for 6 years. I said, at least throw a brother a bone. And finally, I did end up on the cover. So he definitely amended himself. But something that I've been reading for a long time, I participated in doing some writing. I know you guys do your homework before you go in there and spew a bunch of nonsense, because that's some of my issues that I have with some people in the press. And some of it is built into where, like, a lot of these beat writers that have to write a story real quick after the game, you're just a writer.
Right.
That's not really breaking down things. I think you guys go to a different level to where I can hear you guys watch film. And before you assess somebody, like, you're not just going to just spew out a bunch of stuff you saw on TV.
The toughest thing to do is you know, we do some stuff after the game, most impressive, most disappointing list. And I absolutely hate doing those right after the game because, again, especially if we're in the stadium in the press box, you get one shot to see it, maybe up on the Jumbotron a little bit. But you can't watch all 22 players and what's going on.
Correct.
I kind of wish we did that article after the coach's film comes available on Tuesday, where we get the all 22 angles and things like that. But, you know, we put a disclaimer in there. Hey, this is from the first viewing, you know, and when we go back and watch the film, you know, we'll mention, you know what, we put a guy on the list of most disappointing, and you go back and look at it, maybe he wasn't that bad at all, after all. But yeah, we're fortunate that, you know, there's three of us, myself, Scott Reynolds, who's been doing this since 1995, and Trevor Sycamore that we added this year. And Trevor would be a great guy to have on your podcast at some point, too, because you guys could really talk X's and O's. This guy, you know, loves to break down, you know, draft film, game film, things like that. I mean, that's all he does. That's his hobby. That's his life. And he's been a real big addition to us. Puts out a cover three column each week on Wednesday where he, you know, uses clips and things like that. And he comes up with a point. And sometimes he's, you know, he's passionate about what it is. He, for instance, looked at Kendall Beckwith last year. And looked at his college tape and said, I just don't see where this guy is special. Had to admit, you know what? I was kind of wrong. He showed some things as a rookie right off the...
It's okay to be wrong sometimes.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think that's another problem with a lot of people in the media. They want to fight that I'm right. I've literally come out and said I was completely wrong about this player.
Mm-hmm.
There's other players that, I mean, the very high-profile players that I've spoke against for a long time, and it took years when people are finally going, well, I kind of see what you were saying.
Right.
Because I'm looking at the game a lot different than a lot of other people look at the game. I'm looking at it definitely more scientific.
Sure.
Because, you know, being in the trenches, having done that, having sat in a room for year after year watching film, I watch film differently. So when, and I'm going to right off the bat use Gerald McCoy as an example, okay? When somebody comes up the field and gets penetration, that's great. If the running back runs right by you, that's not great.
Exactly.
Those are two different things, mm-hmm. okay? So one of them is good. One of them is bad, but it's all about the result.
Sure.
There's defensive linemen that don't get penetration, but they also don't get moved, and you also don't run the ball near them.
Right.
I know because I could list – last week I listed the top 10 defensive linemen I played against, and all of them on that list are that kind of player. You run the ball near them, you know, it's a bitch, okay?
Was that the most frustrating thing as an offensive lineman, those guys you just couldn't move? Or was it the guys that had that quick get-off like a Gerald McCoy that could mm-hmm. just zip right by you? What was more frustrating for you?
Well, zipping right by you is got to be the most overrated thing in as a defensive lineman. Like I played against John Randall, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody got up the field like John Randall. He's a son of a bitch. But after he got up the field, he would make things happen, and the results would usually be good. See, my problem with Gerald McCoy is he's been doing the same thing since his rookie year. We've been gassing up the same thing since his rookie year. It's never equated to any statistics. It really hasn't.
Right.
It's never equated to our defense being rated very high, and it's never equated to wins. I have a problem with that. Every other great defensive lineman I've ever talked about or heard of were part of a great defensive line. If you're great, it always leads to other people being great. And okay, and please, if you want to disagree with me, I love that, okay? But when people speak on Gerald McCoy's game at a different level than I do, I want to say this. This is what I hear about Gerald McCoy. First of all, I've never in my history of, you know, being around football known a Pro Bowl player to get more guff than Gerald McCoy. And I don't know why that is, okay? Maybe we'll figure it out today. But I also have never seen a Pro Bowl player that everybody wants somebody else to come along and improve his game. Everybody keeps on saying, well, Gerald needs somebody to help him. So who does John Randall need to help him? Who does Warren Sapp need to help him? They don't need anybody. So when I'm comparing Gerald McCoy, I'm comparing him to some of these guys I played against way back when who some are being put into the Hall of Fame. But if he's making a Pro Bowl every year, I hope that's who he wants me to compare him to. And I don't see that player.
You know, when you look at Gerald, and it's the old, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg, is great. Warren Sapp's my all-time favorite Buccaneer player. Okay. All right, and I love Leroy. I've seen them all. I've been around, and I was 1977, I first started watching Buccaneer games. That was the second year they were in existence. So I've seen everybody since day one. But Warren is my favorite player, and it's a combination, obviously, of his talent, his nastiness, his craziness, his work ethic. People don't understand. Mm-hmm. People, you know, look at him as this cocky guy, runs his mouth, mean to fans, not signing autographs. This guy loved to practice, by all accounts. I mean, loved to practice. Mm-hmm. Rule that locker room to a degree with an iron fist. I mean, there were fist fights in that locker room at times with this guy. You know, he brought a presence, and you can't teach that presence that he brought to a football team. You know, but the deal is, though, he did as this defense grew, as after he got drafted in 95, I mean, who did he have? He had Eric Curry at the time, maybe. They brought in Simeon Rice eventually and Greg Spires and Chuck Darby and these guys. You know, I think Warren was going to be great regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly helps if there is talent around him. And the thing, you look at Gerald last year, I mean, they were running guys at defensive end last year that I had to check, and I cover this football team. I'm there every day. I had to look at the roster thing. I don't know who they are.
I have no idea who they are.
You know, and there's only so much he can do on his own. Now, and this is something I don't know if I should have asked you before we got on or sent you the link to it, but Scott wrote an article a couple weeks ago, and he said in his opinion, it's time for Gerald to step aside as far as that face of the franchise leader on the defense. And not because he doesn't try, not because he isn't a talented football player, but as you said, when you look at the whole picture of his career, the results aren't there. How can you continue to be the face of the franchise and a leader of a football team and yet this defense be so bad? Is it time to turn it over to a Quan Alexander, a guy who's...
Don't you think he has already?
You know...
Like, listen, do you know who always talks about Gerald being a great leader? Gerald.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hear his teammates saying it. Listen, I've been in locker rooms. Warren Sapp was a leader, but Warren Sapp wouldn't approach me and say jack shit. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
I've already been in the locker room. I've put it in. I don't need Warren Sapp. Now, Warren Sapp, when he comes out on Sunday, what he does on Sunday makes everybody around him better.
Right.
That's what I'm asking for. To me, Quan Alexander is already the pulse of the Bucs defense. Just because what I see on film, he's coming downhill. He's busting helmets open. He has attitude that's rubbing off on everybody else. You know, to have, you know, Gerald McCoy tell us he's the leader and you're picking people up off the ground, I can't imagine Ray Lewis or Brian Urlacher or Warren Sapp or any of these great players picking up guys off the ground. That's not the attitude that I want.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, Lavonte David and Quan Alexander, I think they've been the leaders of this defense the last 3 years or so, because when you put the film on, they're the ones making the real plays.
Is nastiness, or as these young guys say, you know, players who have dog in them, mm-hmm. is that contagious to other guys?
Hell yeah. Not even just a little bit.
Yeah.
Not just a little bit, a lot. In every single sport, period. This is what I know you weren't going to do with the old Buccaneers film. You weren't going to go on that field and go 80%. You weren't going to do it.
Right.
Because it would have stuck out like a sore thumb. We don't really have that here.
Yeah.
We don't have
it's
it
true.
Here. We don't have every – when you – back in the day of a running back getting tackled 3 yards down the field, there's 11 cats there. I don't see that anymore. That's also instilled by the coaches. I don't know if we had that. We didn't have Rod Marinelli and Herman Edwards and Monty Kiffin and all the other names that ended up being head coach of the NFL.
Right.
That might have been – Tony Dungy put together the best defensive coaching
staff of all time
ever.
Yeah,
I mean, look, yeah. They all ended up being not. They didn't all have success. For instance, Rod Marinelli didn't have any success as a head coach. Went 0-16. But if somebody asked me who was the best individual coaches in the NFL ever, I'm going to say Alex Gibbs, who was an offensive line coach mm-hmm. for forever, and Rod Marinelli. Because Rod Marinelli's players love him to death, like almost to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
Like if Rod calls any of his old players up right now, they're going to go and they're going to fight for Rod. That's a fact.
Yeah.
And when I'm talking about names like Warren Sapp, Simeon Rice, who does Simeon Rice and Warren Sapp like? Nobody. But they love Rod Marinelli.
Yeah.
And they're going to go to war and they're going to play for this dude. So the coaches have a little bit to do with the attitude. Rod Marinelli as a defensive line coach, he used to get guys like Jason Manecki going balls out in practice because he was trying to get five plays in the game. I don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
I see these young players getting in there, and it just seems like they're kind of going through the motions where you weren't going to go through the motions in a Rod Marinelli defense. So the whole thing with Gerald McCoy stepping back as a leader, first of all, he used to be the guy in front talking to the whole team. Now that's Jameis. I think Jameis needs to take a step back personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jameis took on too much
too soon,
and it's almost in a way looked a little bit artificial. And I think McCoy sounded looking a little artificial himself.
And that I don't think there's any doubt about that. And again, that's something actually Scott wrote even a few weeks before the Gerald piece that, you know, during the season, you know, after the eating W's thing, you know what I mean, that's turned into a spoof now and people are making fun of, whatever, you know. Jameis wants to control every aspect of everything, and we see that in his gameplay when he tries to make every play, and just, you know, he's got to learn that he can't do it all himself. And Gerald, I remember when Jameis was drafted, Gerald up at the podium saying, I'm going to take Jameis under my wing because I was thrust into this face of the franchise thing as the number three or number four overall draft pick.
But let me ask you, who thrust them into that?
Well, it just came with the territory because, remember, I mean, when Gerald was drafted in 2010, this team was coming off the, I think, a 3-13 season in 2009. In Raheem's first year, they were transitioning from John Gruden. They had gotten rid of the Derek Brooks and the Warren Sapps and the star players. And it was he and Josh Freeman. I mean, they were the recognizable guys. And then there were, you know, 20 other players that you didn't really know who the hell they were. I mean, these were two names. And so I think by default he ended up in that. And the organization in general, all of a sudden his picture goes up on the stadium, right? And he's in the TV commercials and things like that because they're trying to sell this brand. And I think it was a combination of all those things. Jameis also took that role being the number one overall draft pick. He wasn't, you know, the number 27th pick in the first round. He was the number one guy. Mm-hmm. And again, came with an illustrious college career. You know, I think he was 26-1 or 29-1 in his college career with the championship and the Heisman Trophy. Sometimes I think it just comes with the territory. It's natural for Jameis, but at the same time, I agree with you. Sometimes it can be too much. And Jameis, and Scott wrote about this, just needs to settle down and worry about his game. You know what I mean? Because you have to have, in my opinion, Ian, you have to have a resume. You know what I mean? I can't go into a new – I couldn't go get hired on by ESPN, walk in the office and start telling people and being a leader and this is the way we're going to do things. Well, based on what? Exactly. I'm the new guy here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's a pecking order.
Well, that's a fact. And I think a lot of things – I agree with almost everything you just said. And when you said when McCoy got here, he got it by default. You can't get leadership by default. Cannot. It's never happened, and it's never going to happen.
And you're either a leader or you're not, right? Can you become a leader? I mean, is it in your
an
nature?
Overused word. Let me give you some names in the past.
Okay.
All right. Tony Mayberry, is he a leader?
He was for you guys probably, but one of the quietest guys.
How about for anybody? How about Tony started 9 straight years for the Bucks and didn't miss a game?
Yeah.
That's leadership.
That's true.
Okay. Paul Gruber. You didn't hear him say a word. I didn't hear him say a word. Is he a leader? Hell yeah.
Everybody respected what he did.
Period.
Yep.
You know what? Now that I look back, I had some leadership skills.
Sure.
Because on Sunday, I was running around and I was trying to split some helmets. And not a lot of people do that.
Right.
Okay. Mike Alstott never said jack shit. But he was a leader because he came in as a rookie. And I'm watching him bounce off cats. And I was like, I remember pulling him aside going, you just keep yourself clean, bro. You're a bad son of a bitch. Okay, that's leadership to me. Steve DeBerg walked in the huddle as a leader. So, you have to earn leadership. Warren Sapp, at no time of his career did I ever hear him say he was a leader. That makes me leery when I hear people say leadership.
Yeah.
Derek Brooks never said he was a leader.
Right. Rondé Barber
never said they were leaders, but when it came down to the nitty-gritty and you put the film on and this is leadership now, mm-hmm. not what somebody says in the press. Everybody wants to hear what somebody says in the press and make them a leader. The leadership starts when you put the film on Monday. The leaders rise because we're going to watch 16 films.
Yep.
And the leaders are going to go, well, that guy's prepared always. He's a leader. That's it. And he knows what he's doing. He knows why he's doing it. He's giving effort in practice. But when you put that film on a Monday, that has to be it. And there's times where, you know, I hear somebody played well, and I'm thinking, well, if you think that's well, then maybe we're not good. Because it really irked me this year. And let me tell me if it irked you. It irked me when Jason Light came after the season, and he said, you know, it was making him uncomfortable. You know, the expectations mm-hmm. of his football team. Does that bother you? Because it bothers me that a GM is going to put a football team on the field that he doesn't expect to make the playoffs when there's free agency and you didn't make enough noise.
The word he used was cringed, and that made me cringe mm-hmm. when I heard that. And now the next day, Scott spoke to him. It was over at the East-West Shrine game. The day before, he had talked to Rick Stroud, I believe. Scott talked to him, and Jason kind of wanted to clarify a little bit. In his opinion, and the way he explained it is, he didn't speak the right. He didn't mean to use that term in that way. His thought on the expectation. Yes, he has expectations to win every football game they play. I remember one time asking Warren Sapp, or I don't know if it was me, but I was in the huddle. Somebody said, you know, how many games are you going to win this year? And Warren said, we're going to go 16-0. Mm-hmm. And somebody goes, nobody goes 16-0. And he goes, well, I play for this damn team. Which game do you want me to tell you we're going to lose?
Exactly.
You know, and that's the way Jason Light should be. And I think that is the way that Jason Light is. His clarification was he cringed at the expectations that this offense was going to come out day one and be this juggernaut. Mm-hmm. And there were, I was one of those guys. I picked this team to be 12-4. I saw a 9-7 football team that added an O.J. Howard, that had Jameis Winston going into his third season, that had a Chris Godwin added to it, Cameron Brate back again, and DeSean Jackson. And I said, even if this defense doesn't get any better, they should be able to outscore teams, right? That was stupid on my part, all right? I took the bait. And I think that's what Jason was saying. You know, he knew that there were still deficiencies on this football team. And I wasn't the only one saying this was a playoff team, a 10-6, 11-5, or 12-4 football team.
And I never do. I said this is a playoff football team. And once again, when you're going back to Jason Light, and you're telling me if he knew there was deficiencies on the team, at the beginning of the year, where would he have told you the deficiency is? I want to hear this. Where would he have told you at the beginning of the year? Because where would you have said the offensive deficiencies were?
I would have said offensively, very little. I expected J.R. Sweezy to come in and, because he missed the year before, mm-hmm. and play at that, you know, level that they expected when they signed him to the big deal. But I thought Donovan Smith takes another step.
That's a question, because this is as Buccaneer fans, I think we look at things with, you know, rose-colored glasses, because Donovan Smith has played the same his whole career. Mm-hmm. J.R. Sweezy, after missing a whole season for a back injury, I believe, it's hard to think that you're going to come back the same football player.
Yeah.
Ali Marpet, who I thought was ignorant moving from guard to center,
right.
It didn't work for me because he wasn't any better than any center we had.
He was a rookie again. He was a rookie again.
Exactly.
When you move a guy who, I mean, he became a rookie.
Make rookie mistakes.
Right.
It didn't make sense. Now, the rest of it, O.J. Howard is just a number because he's never played in the NFL.
Right.
And going into this season, when you look at the Buccaneers, and I said this at the end of the season, that they're not far away. I don't think they're far. And this is a big if now. If you get me two effective offensive linemen and two effective defensive linemen, I think this is a playoff football team. How are you going to get it done? No, if you wait till draft, you're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
If you wait till draft, there's not going to be many Calais Campbells out there. And by the way, we started this way back when free agency was started. I said, go get DeSean Jackson and Calais Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Go do it. It's going to make you better. Yeah. What did he do for Jacksonville?
Yep.
He brought an attitude. You see him. He enjoys the game. That rubs off on everybody else.
Sure.
But don't wait for the draft to get a player that's going to be a difference maker, because if you look back to the Bucs' history, how many rookies made a difference on that football team? I mean, how many would you say back? I'm thinking Michael Clayton had a great rookie year.
And Michael Clayton had a great rookie year. Doug Martin had a solid rookie year.
And nothing since.
And you know.
Go back to our Hall of Famers. John Lynch didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Warren had, what, five sacks his first year, maybe?
Derek was okay.
Right.
Lynch didn't start, I don't believe.
Hell, they drafted Brian Kelly to replace Rondé Barber.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, Lynch didn't start, like you say, right away. I mean, you're right. And that's what I tell people, say, oh, hey, go get – now, listen, Bradley Chubb may be the difference – or the I'm trying to think
exception.
Of the right analogy. Exception to the rule as far as rookie pass rushers and double-digit sacks. The last one, if I'm not mistaken, last rookie to come in and get double-digit sacks, I believe, was all the way back in 2011 with Alden Smith and the 49ers.
Okay.
Joey Bosa, I think, ended up with 9.5, something like that, as rookie year.
He's legitimate.
But you don't find double-digit sack guys as rookies. There's too much to learn in this league. Offensive linemen are too good.
It's too much.
You know, Bradley Chubb could possibly be that guy that's going to get there or get close to that. But, I mean, look at Noah Spence, 5.5 sacks his rookie year. You know, people expected him to maybe be that double-digit sack guy. Last year doesn't even hardly play because of the shoulder injury. So, you're right about that. I mean, people say, oh, this team, you know, just find a pass rusher. There's not – this is a poor 4-3 defensive end draft class. Very poor. You've got Bradley Chubb. You've got a lot of 3-4 guys, okay, tweeners maybe, but that's not what this team runs.
But the days of, you know, looking out there and seeing Reggie White's and, you know, all these other defensive ends, there's not a lot of great pass rushers, period, anymore in the NFL, it doesn't seem like. And it just seems like if you expect, like Chubb, do I expect him to get double-digit sacks? I don't. And the part that people don't see is a lot of these rookie players, and Bosa might be the exception. I just like the way the kid plays.
Right.
A lot of times in between getting a few sacks, they're playing like rookies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
They're not in the right gap.
That's right.
Like way back when the Buccaneers were fantastic defensively, they knew that Sheldon Corals was going to be in this gap.
Yes.
They knew that Warren was going to be in this gap. Little things. And this defense that we have, it hasn't been together enough for us to really be worried about little things because big things are still glaring with this defense.
Mm-hmm.
There's times that our defense plays and I go, what are they even trying to get accomplished? Because when you talk about, you know, our defensive front, they rushed the passer the least in the whole NFL this year. And somebody asked me just today, what are the Bucs? I said, if the Bucs can't hurry up a passer, you can't make it to the playoffs this year.
And particularly playing in a division where you've got Cam Newton, you've got Matt Ryan, and you've got Drew Brees, three of the best in the entire NFL. And you're going to face these guys twice each year. There's six games right off the bat right there. If you don't pressure these guys, and Cam is not probably – no, he's not the passer that Drew Brees is or Matt Ryan is. But
he's an issue, though.
He is a major issue. And if he has all day back there, he's going to find a lane to run through, he'll hurt you that way.
He'll kill you.
He absolutely will kill you. This team has got to find a way because – and I've said it and written it several times. You can have – two Deion Sanders at cornerback and two Ronnie Lott at safety. If you don't get pressure on the quarterback, Drew Brees will pick you apart eventually.
Every single time.
You know.
And you know what? The Bucs defense didn't play that poorly against some of these, you know, South teams, and we still didn't figure out ways to beat them, which scares me.
Yeah.
It scares me because I thought we played some of the better games against some of these South teams.
We did.
Kept the offense down, and we still figured out ways to lose some of these games. So
they did. There's no doubt about it. And you know, you look at and again, there was a question. I just put up our Bucks Monday mailbag. We do that every Monday where readers put hashtag PR mailbag. We take questions and we answer them. And one of them was, what in the hell is there to look forward to in 2018? And you know what? When the season ended, I felt exactly the same way. You know, the Gruden thing didn't work out. We realized it was going to be status quo on this coaching staff. And I thought to myself, this is a lame duck season, right? Jameis potentially suspended. I don't think he's going to get suspended now, but he could. And I'm looking at this going, gosh, 2018 is going to be a waste of a year. Now, when I look back at it, and since I've looked back at it, you know, I looked at the games the Buccaneers lost. And again, there's no such thing as moral victories. You don't get a participation trophy. You know, nobody's given them a ribbon because they played Carolina close and New Orleans close and Atlanta close. They still lost those games. Except New Orleans there at the end. But, you know, they've got to find a way to get over the hump. But I agree with you, they're not necessarily that far away. In the trenches, there's a plug for the name of your podcast.
Thank you.
But, I mean, it makes perfect sense. I'm an old school guy from Plant City. I played youth football at Pinecrest starting in 1978, then I played Plant City High School. We didn't have anybody could throw the football. Mm-hmm. We ran the football. We tried to beat you up front. And you know what? It's very simple. The team that blocks the best and the team that tackles the best wins the most football games. Mm-hmm. They really do. I mean, we try and make things way more complicated than it can be.
True.
Unfortunately, this football team doesn't have the best offensive line nor the best defensive line in their division. Probably
maybe the worst.
Absolutely the worst. You know, and that's just a recipe for disaster. Although, now they also added this in the mailbag to answer this question. But you know what? At some point, screw it. Just go out score the other guys, right? I mean, the offense is the NFL is an offensive product now. All the rules favor the offense these days.
Yeah, but
you know, look at the Super Bowls the last few years. They're high scoring affairs. The Eagles had a tremendous defense. They had no answer really for Tom Brady. And the Patriots defense had no answer for Nick freaking Foles. I mean,
but we're not trying to get to the Super Bowl. We're trying to get to the playoffs.
I agree.
This Buccaneer team's not ready to get to no dang Super Bowl for sure.
I agree.
So when you look at Nick Foles and the Eagles and what they did and the Patriots, what they did, like, it looks like they're playing a different football game. Okay.
Yeah.
But they also have a winning attitude happening in the locker room, which I don't know if we have yet. Actually, I do know we don't have that winning attitude. And if I say to you 2017, Now, people, I heard people say, well, the Bucks should have been 11-5. And I said, well, answer this question. What do the Bucks do well consistently that they can fall back on? What would your answer be? What do they do well consistently that they can fall back on every game?
There was no identity to this football team on either sides of the football, on either side. And that's concerning to me with Dirk Cutter running this offense in his third season. There's yet to be an identity on this offense. This isn't a running football team. This is a team that can move the ball between the 20s, but bogs down in the red zone. They don't play consistent on special teams at all.
No. Oh, they don't seem to get big plays on special teams.
Never. And you know, they had two punts blocked. I don't know if a Buccaneer football team, and I'm talking going back to the 76 years.
Sure.
I mean, that just should never. You should go two or three years without ever having a punt blocked. Not two in a season.
That is true. And listen, this is another thing with this Buccaneer team. Look, I sat there and I watched them, and I'm looking at the mentality of them. If you're looking, you said something earlier, we just have to go out and outscore people. There's only one problem with that. When you're playing against Drew Brees or you're playing against Matt Ryan, and we have Jameis Winston and, you know, some immature players around Jameis at times. When you try to outscore somebody, he's going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. If Jameis throws the ball 40 times, he's going to throw two or three picks. Yeah. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah.
Now, imagine Jameis Winston with a running game that runs for 130 yards a game. Imagine him only throwing it 30 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to eliminate some of those bonehead mistakes that he falls into, because we still know that if Jameis doesn't play well, we don't win. I don't think it happened last year.
Right.
He has to play well for us to win. But it shouldn't be that way all the time. That means he's carrying this football team, and that's not what it's about. When you look at, you know, Philadelphia Eagles, or you look at the New England Patriots, you can put Jameis on the Patriots and they're going to win. You mm-hmm. can put Jameis on the Eagles and I believe they're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
But Jameis on the Buccaneers, the equation changes to where he has to play out of his ass for us to win. That means the equation has to be changed. So that means get me a couple other bruising offensive linemen, run the football when necessary, because when you make a team dink and dunk down the field, which we do a lot, we don't get a lot of big plays.
Right.
When you dink and dunk down the field, you know what happens? When you get to the red zone, it becomes very tight.
Yeah.
And now it comes down to being a little burlier than somebody, and we don't really have that mentality.
Right.
And that's when Jameis is making some mistakes.
The best football teams in the red zone, if you go back and look at the top 10 productive teams in the red zone, they're also the best running teams in the red zone. The team that runs mm-hmm. the ball for a touchdown in the red zone have the highest percentage of red zone success. This football team was bad at that last year.
Absolutely. And we're not as physical. We're not even half as physical as we need to be up front, okay? And a lot of that's mentality. They just fired a defensive line coach. I don't know much about him.
Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you this. Warren Sapp was not a fan of Jay Hayes. And again, I don't understand all of this aspect of it. You do more so because you played the game in the league. Warren was so frustrated that Jay Hayes was making the defensive line calls from the field prior to the snap.
Okay.
He said Monty Kiffin, Rod Marinelli never did that.
Mm.
They asked us, hey, what do you see? What do you see? What do you want to do here? You know
exactly.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And for a defensive line that was a patchwork defensive line, bringing in new guys off the street every other week, I don't know that was such a good idea. He hated the amount of stunts and twists and different things that they ran. Look, Gerald McCoy, as we talked about, and just to preface this, I do love Gerald McCoy. I respect him as a man, as a person. He works his ass off. I've seen this guy after practice working with offensive linemen, young offensive linemen, you know, showing them different things many times. He doesn't get any credit for that, doesn't get any publicity for that, you know, isn't saying, hey, look at me. It's just things that you notice when practice is mm-hmm. over, things like that. But I want
sure
to say.
He's not saying, hey, look at me, because
well,
you guys are
no,
there.
No, no.
When I watch.
Jameis likes attention. I'm sorry. Gerald loves attention.
Okay, I watch Hard Knocks, okay?
Yes.
That whole thing was, hey, look at me. The whole
Gerald loves attention. He is one of those guys. He does
now,
like
gonna,
the spotlight
gonna,
on him.
I'm going to say something. I hope it doesn't hurt your feelings.
Won't hurt my feelings.
Gerald McCoy's whole life is to make everybody around him love him.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he gets by.
Mm-hmm.
Ask, and I have asked some people that are in the same locker room as him. They don't have the same attitude, because a lot of times the press look at things completely different than players. If you see a player that talks to the press all the time and is always good with the press, a lot of times we thought they were ass kissers.
Mm-hmm.
And I never said no to the press, but I didn't use...
You didn't seek it out.
I didn't use the press as my vehicle.
Right.
Gerald does that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes down to it, Gerald picking people up off the ground makes him have a lot of friends around him. Gerald being accessible to the press at all times makes them all love him everywhere he goes. He's always doing interviews wherever it may be. That's all good. That's part of it. That's what has led to a lot of his success. And I've been in the media in this area for a long time. And most of the media, when they talk about him, speak just like you spoke. He's a great guy. That's not what it's about.
Well, hey, listen.
You know what I'm saying?
Again, that's one reason why I love Warren. People say, well, Warren Sapp was an asshole. Can I say that on the podcast?
Oh, please say whatever you want. You can say anything you want.
Warren Sapp was an asshole. You know what? Warren Sapp has been an asshole to me. Still is from time to time. Okay? But I don't give a damn because I don't care if my football team is full of choir boys, right?
He's not babysitting your kid, right?
I'm not. I don't want him to marry my sister. Yeah. Somebody said today, ask those hookers in Arizona how they feel. I said, I'm not asking the guy to marry my sister. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't want him to marry my sister. I want him for 3 hours on Sunday to go kick somebody's ass, and that's what he did.
Listen, Warren Sapp has been an asshole to me last year, the first year I met him, sometimes in the middle, and that's Warren.
And he'll flip a switch, and then he's your best friend with his arms around your neck. He's done it to me in the last year. I mean, he's I'm trying to think of the right word. I don't want to use the word bipolar. I'm not going to diagnose a guy.
Go ahead.
I'm not going to diagnose a guy medically.
I'll do it.
But
I'll do it. Just the other day when they're talking about Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel says, I deal with depression and I'm bipolar. And I said on air, 80% of NFL players are bipolar.
Yeah.
And If you go out and you piss it away, you're going to have depression because you pissed it away.
Yeah.
I don't feel sorry for Johnny Manziel. Listen, being bipolar means you have a lot of ups and you have a lot of downs and you have like a roller coaster.
Sure.
As a football player, boy, I mean, I have to have ups and downs too because the way I got myself on Sunday, I can't walk around the mall like that.
That's true.
So it's kind of a bipolar type of existence, unfortunately.
The best defensive lineman, pass rushers, when you go back and look, and I know somebody, and I don't think we've ever reported this, so I'm not going to say who, but a front office member of the Bucks, was asked to kind of take a look at the best defensive lineman in history and what's the one common trait that they had. And when they went back and looked at it, a lot of these guys grew up in tough environments, have bipolar issues, anger management issues. Now, there are exceptions to the rule. Reggie White, Leroy Selman, two of the nicest guys in the world, except on Sundays for 3 hours.
Yeah, they weren't nice on Sunday.
But then there were, but a lot of these guys, the Lawrence Taylors, the Warren Sapps, I mean, they're jerks 90% of the time.
Yes,
you know what I mean. I think I have as good a relationship with Warren Sapp as anybody in the media. Maybe Ira Kaufman better, and Scott's known him longer. But Warren and I always, when we see each other, always have something to talk about football wise, college football wise. But that switch can flip
real quick
in a second.
Yeah.
You know, you just never know when he's going to undress you publicly, and he's done it many a time.
Warren, and I know Warren, I know him well, he just wants to be in control at all times.
Does he test people? Is this a psychological thing with him?
I've never met anybody in my life that tests more people in my life.
It's calculated.
He knows what he's doing. Listen. Yeah. And I have an example. He says he was a rookie. He said something to me. I said, come here, sit. And I said, as long as we're good, you won't talk to me this way. I go, we're good? He goes, yeah, we're good. I go, you will not talk to me like that again.
Yeah.
We're good. We never had an issue after that about anything like that.
Sure.
Dave Levy. Dave Levy is a film guy forever. He's not there anymore. Warren Sapp said something. Dave stood up. He goes, who the frick you think I am? You're not talking to me. That's all he wants.
Yeah.
He wants to be able to be in control, but he wants to, I call it chin checking.
Mm-hmm.
If you fail the chin check, your life, your existence is going to be long. It's going to be long.
Yeah.
So at one time, he chin checked you, and you didn't cower.
Right.
If you cowered, he's going to eat you up.
Yeah.
Or if you start tossing the salad, which a lot of the freaking media do, he's going to eat you up as well.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're a player and you step to him, he steps to you, you step back, That's what you are.
Yeah.
He stepped to me. I said, okay, let's figure this out now because this is not going to work. And Warren Sapp as a person, I've been out with Warren Sapp a couple, three times where he did a couple things that I didn't like, mm-hmm. told him. One time I left, told him, I said, I'm really not about that, you know? But sometimes what makes you great also leads to your demise, I've said many times.
Yes.
And what makes him great on the field also off the field gets him in trouble.
Right.
But the one thing about Warren Sapp, and I'm going to say this compared to all the players now. When you talked about running stunts earlier, okay? When you run stunts, it has to be a selfless thing. You can't both get sacks. One player has to give it up. And nobody wants to give it up for the Buccaneers. If you had Warren Sapp, they ran stunts better than anybody I've ever seen because it was scientific.
Mm-hmm.
Warren Sapp can get on anybody's edge. Anybody. You can't stop him from getting on your edge. You just try to stop him from getting on your edge, he'll come back inside and you're in big, big trouble.
Yeah.
So he knows he can get on your edge. He gets on the guard's edge, and now it has to be selfless. Now he pushes off on the inside of the tackle. That means he's probably not going to get a sack because now there's two guys blocking you. Now, as you're pushing off on the inside of the tackle and the end comes back around, who's coming off on the end? Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm watching Gerald McCoy does, he hits it outside. He tries to jump around and get a sack, and he gets punched, and the guard sits back, and here comes the end right in his lap.
Yeah,
it has to be a selfless thing. Gerald McCoy doesn't want to hear, you're not the man on this play. But when you talk about we need other people to come help Gerald be better, Brad Culpepper had double-digit sacks 1 year, I think.
Yeah.
Brad Culpepper's not a great pass rusher,
right?
But he fed off of the energy all around him.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing. We can't get one double-digit pass, you know, a sacker in since Simeon Rice.
I know.
You would think he would just fall into that by accident.
By accident, sure.
So the thing, that the mentality of all these players now drives me nuts because I went through the whole Warren Sapp thing and I see the difference and the attitude's way, way different. Now
let me go back real quick. When I said I was prefacing this saying I like Gerald McCoy and this and that. Now I've kind of lost my train of thought on that. What was I going to say about Gerald? We were talking about the stunts and things like that. You know, Gerald, you're right, has that quick get off, gets up the field. But see, he doesn't have, in my opinion, again, I'm no football expert, that not the second move. Maybe he has the second move, but the third move. Warren Sapp was able to redirect better than anybody. Mm-hmm. Once, I mean, he had a quick get off, right? Just as good as Gerald.
In this room right here, mm-hmm. me and Warren almost fought when I told him, I go, Gerald's better get off. He goes, what are you talking about? I said, Gerald's get off is better than yours.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm going to correct you here. Gerald not only does he not have a third move, he doesn't have a second
right.
move. And he's not an instinctive football player. Great players are instinctive. They feel where the ball, like you, a great player can get blindfolded and feel a block
mm-hmm.
and know where the ball's going. All of them. He doesn't have that. It's hard.
And that's the thing that frustrated me with Jay Hayes and some of these line calls that he was making during the game. You're taking let's take Gerald's strength. Mm-hmm. Quick off the ball, straight up the field, get to the quarterback. Quickest. Point is, you know, point A to point B, whatever the stupid saying is. Look, he's as close to the quarterback as anybody on this football team. Why in the hell are you trying to run him outside mm-hmm. to redirect to come back in? It sure. just doesn't work. I mean, it didn't play to the strengths of what Gerald does best.
Well, I think when you talk about what Gerald does best, we're going to have, you know, our attitudes are going to be different because you're talking about Gerald getting up the field. My problem with Gerald is, and I'm going to compare him to other defensive tackles that have been great. Great defensive tackles, when the quarterback throws the ball, is always near the quarterback. Period. Sometimes look and see where Gerald is.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes Gerald is the furthest from the quarterback. That's because Gerald has a hit or miss move. If it misses, it's shut.
Yeah.
If Sapp tries to swim outside and you punch him, he gathers himself and he lowers his shoulder and he'll run into the guard and he'll push the guard into the quarterback. That's as good as a sack sometimes.
You know what? Warren told me last year we were talking about Gerald and we were just on the phone. We were talking about something else, the Timmy Jernigan situation that came up last year or whatever. I don't know. But we got on the subject of Gerald McCoy, and he and Gerald talk a couple times a week mm-hmm. during the season. Gerald watches Sapp film constantly. He'll call Warren and say, what were you thinking in the Cincinnati game? And, you know, I could see something changed. And Kelly Smith, you know, in the next play, you drove him into the ground. And, and Warren has the ability to recall, you know, Absolutely. Specific things like this. And they'll talk about it. But Warren told me, he goes, let me tell you something. He says, if I had Gerald's size and strength, they would have kicked me out of the league. I would have been banned from the NFL.
Absolutely. Now, when you talk about athletic ability, if Gerald had Warren's athletic ability, and he does not, okay, that's you can't have it all, okay?
Right.
Athletic ability-wise, Warren Sapp, and I've said this, Warren Sapp would have been a great guard. Warren Sapp would have been a great center. Warren Sapp would have been a good linebacker.
Warren Sapp was a good baseball player when he was a kid. Probably was a good basketball player. Probably could play. Probably plays a hell of a golf game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just naturally gifted.
He's a naturally gifted kid that could play tight end. Great hands, the whole nine yards. Also, change directions very, very well. Gerald doesn't change directions very well.
That's what I was trying to say earlier. You know, with the second move, that ability to once he gets up the field. If Drew Brees steps up, he has a hard time redirecting and changing direction to get back to recover from that.
Absolutely.
You know?
But once again, that to me is an instinctive thing. That's instincts. Great pass rushers, when they're rushing, if the quarterback steps up, they'll plant and come back under. And they get a lot of sacks that way.
Mm-hmm.
Gerald keeps on going up the field. He doesn't feel it. He doesn't know where the ball is. I played against some players that are so darn instinctive. Like I said, you could blindfold them. They'll know exactly where the ball is by the lineman's footsteps and the tension that one lineman is giving the other. And it's something that they were born with. Gerald has never really had to develop that. And there's another thing that I think holds Gerald back. And I don't want to make it into a Gerald McCoy bashing thing. The injuries that he had early in his career were bicep tears by reaching.
Yeah.
That's a non-instinctive thing.
Right.
An instinctive thing is to move your body into it.
Yeah.
So once he reached out a couple times and tore his biceps, now he doesn't reach. That's why the ball goes right by him often, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, and again, I'm not equating what I did as a football coach to playing in the league or what Gerald does or you did. But I remember, you know, even at the high school level, you know, because I coached offensive line, you know, one of the things was, you know, coach, you know, this guy's so fast, you know, I can't block him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but you don't need to sometimes.
Yes.
Especially if the play is going away.
Yeah, let him go.
If he's the backside defensive end, let him run his ass all the way up the field. Who cares? The ball's going to be gone from the quarterback or the running back's going to be around the corner and he's done. You know, you don't have to. A great block is not always a pancake block with you laying on top of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a great block is you barely get your hands on a guy. A great block is when your guy doesn't affect the football play.
Well said. If I'm blocking Gilbert Brown as opposed to blocking John Randall, those are two different experiences. Like Gilbert Brown, when the ball snapped, is going to be right where he's at.
Right.
John Randall may not.
Right.
He might swim. He may spike. He may spin. I don't know what the hell.
Yeah.
So you know what you do? You have to be passive.
Yeah.
And that's why it becomes tough because John Randall, and you might as well just insert Warren Sapp in this equation. John Randall and Warren Sapp can play the bull rush game. They can play the spin game.
Mm-hmm.
They can play the spike game. They can play a lot of games, but it's like chess. When you're trying to defend everything, you get discombobulated.
I used to tell my guys all the time, I'd be like, and this was back before MMA was big, but I said, you ever watch boxing? Playing offensive line, you're countering. The first play of the game, let's see what I got. Let's see what you got. Okay. All right. All of a sudden, okay, this guy's a lot quicker than me. What am I going to do now? It's a thinking game.
It really is.
There's not a position, in my opinion, on a football field that's more of a thinking game.
You might be right.
Than the offensive line and defensive line battles.
I literally made it in the league as long as I did because I think I played hard. And I think I outsmarted a lot of players.
The old cliche that offensive linemen are the dumbest players on the football team is bullcrap.
Well,
the ones that are dumb don't last very long in this league.
It's actually documented that they're the smartest.
Yeah.
It's documented.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Right.
And I say defensive linemen, they're the dumbest. That's just me. I might be a little biased. But like somebody like when you're watching film and I'm watching Eric Swan in his last four games, nobody can stop his bull rush. Nobody. And I'm like, except for Larry Allen, who's from a different planet.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so nobody stops his bull rush. How the hell, I'm undersized for a guard, how am I going to stop his bull rush? So I got to come with a game plan.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I look at my quarterback and he's coming, you know, he's doing a cadence and he audibles, I look at Eric Swan, who once again is not that smart. So now we're audibling from a run to a pass. So normally, if you go from a run to a pass, normally offensive linemen, you'll see them start to drop their butt a little bit, because that's what you have to do.
Right.
With Eric Swan, he would audible, and I'd look, and I would put my hand forward, and I would start digging my foot. And he would look at me thinking, he thinks I'm dumb. This is a run play. And I come at him, and I put my hands on him,
right,
and then I sit. And then you go, then you hear, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then you're done. You see, now, if I sat back and let him just run into me, right, he's going to run me straight into the quarterback. Because some of these guys, like, if right now, me and you, if you put your hand on the ground and I put my hand on the ground, you better be a special athlete to stop me, mm-hmm, because the equation is bad.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes the equation was bad.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm going against Reggie White, and you just think I'm just going to just straight stop him from running me back, or Gilbert Brown at 360 and 5'11", you better stop. You better slow that down somewhere or some way. So, you know, with the offensive line and the thinking thing, offensive line is for thinkers. Defensive line is for reactors.
Mm-hmm.
Your defensive lineman, dummy, just go find the ball. Just go upfield, blast everything in your way, and go find the ball. Offense is a little bit more cerebral and deep thinking than all that kind of stuff. Like,
I, you know, and not to get off another tangent, but what you just said made me think of something. I think defensive coordinators, and I think this defense with Mike Smith at times, tried to make these guys too cerebral. Because Lavonte David is a reactionary player. Mm-hmm. That's the way he's played football his whole career, right? Quan Alexander the same way. Some of those defensive linemen. You know, Warren Sapp said, you know, we stopped the run on the way to sack the quarterback.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
But everybody
one gap,
did. Everybody.
One gap. We knew the guy behind us was going to be in there. Everybody was disciplined. We're going to be in their spot and do it. They weren't. There wasn't a lot of. They weren't. It was not a complex defense that Monty Kiffin ran.
Very simple. It's very simple, but it was simple because everybody knew where to be.
Right.
John Lynch knew where to be. Brad Culpepper. Like, if you just put Brad Culpepper on this defense right now and just stuck him in there, it's not going to be that effective.
Right.
But he was a deep-thinking football player, and he could hit that one guy going.
Yeah.
Just go. And this is another thing. The attitude of hitting a gap is important. Like, when I see these linemen spiking, it used to be, go blow up that hole, and anything there, destroy it. Now mm-hmm. it's kind of like, let's step inside and get pushed and washed down. And they get washed all the time. It drives me nuts.
Right.
Chris Baker, how many plays did he make last year? Just be nice. Be nice. And how many plays did Chris Baker have? I'm going to say three.
I'd say a handful more, but, I mean, there was, you know, every other game, you know, he made a play.
A play. I mean, he was a bust.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he...
Not a good fit, not a good scheme fit coming from the 3-4, I think, that the Redskins were doing, but also... From a work ethic standpoint,
not a good attitude,
you know, and a poor attitude. I think it was just a bad signing. And I'll say this: I know, because I talked to a member of the front office, and it wasn't Jason, but I talked to him when we were up in Jacksonville when the Bucs were playing on that Thursday night game against ESPN. Which, by the way, when you watch that game, the Buccaneers dominated that entire game. Who in the hell would have thought the Buccaneers would be 5-11 and the Jaguars are one Tom Brady fourth quarter comeback from playing in a Super Bowl?
We were laughing at the Jaguars.
Laughing at them.
You know, these guys are clowns.
Watching Doug Marone. Ian, I'm old school. You're old school. But I watched Doug Marone had these guys running gassers after practice, sideline to sideline. If you jump off sides, we're moving it back 5 yards. And I'm giggling to myself going, this ain't Little League. This isn't going to work. Guess what?
You watch Miracle?
I was wrong.
I watched Miracle on Saturday. There's a little bit to be said about busting your ass and getting yourself in amazing shape.
Yep.
Now, with this day and age, with these football players, they're soft as hell with these football players, mm-hmm. and I don't think they're really ready to play when it comes to September. But, you know, you talk about attitude and bringing in Calais Campbell, and he made everybody else better. And when you talk about quarterbacks sometimes being overrated – Blake Bortles.
Right.
If you take Blake Bortles and put him on the Buccaneers last year, they win two games.
Yeah.
They win two games.
Exactly.
You know, you want to see, you see all these great players throughout the years. There's never been great offensive players without great offensive coordinators and great players around them.
Right.
So I think we have the ability to be a great offensive team with a couple additions. OJ Howard this year, if he grows, like he was in spurts,
mm-hmm.
but he really didn't do a lot last year. every once in a while, you'd see like, oh my God, like this kid is a special athlete, but he never took a game over.
Right.
He would have a splash play here and there, you know. But,
I blame Cutter for some of that because there were games, Ian, last year where this guy was not even targeted. That just can't, sure. I mean, you can't, you, I mean, when you go back, and this is something Trevor did, and asked people to read Trevor's cover threes because they're so good, but he took a look at OJ last year before the season started, and he said, essentially, this guy is another wide receiver because there's not mm-hmm. really a tight end in the league. Maybe Jimmy Graham in his prime, and Gronk to a degree, who gets out of his stance and up the field faster than O.J. Howard mm-hmm. does. And then when you have Cameron Brate on the other side, when you're running that 12 personnel, mm-hmm. it just, I mean, it keeps the defense guessing. They don't know is it going to be a run. Is it going to be a pass? You've got two pass casting out. To me, I just, look, Dirk Cutter has forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. Let's just face it. We can all sit and cherry pick mm-hmm. and backseat drive sure. and tell Dirk what he should have done. But I think when Dirk looks back at this year, I think he's going to say, you know, we maybe missed some opportunities to utilize O.J. Howard a little bit more. Now, at the same time, I'm not on the inside at practice every day. Mm-hmm. O.J. just might have not got it. Sometimes guys just don't get it.
Well, O.J. Howard, as good as he looks, mm-hmm. and a lot of it's just he's a specimen. He looks wonderful. Right. He's catching the ball. He's pretty. Right.
He's a handsome devil too. I'm gonna give it up.
I'm sure he is.
I'm the straightest man alive. But O.J. Howard's a good-looking man.
Gotta give credit where it's due.
I'm not afraid to say it.
What we don't know is when we're watching Monday film that he's figuring out what the defenses are.
Yeah.
We don't know that, and it may seem like he's not targeted, but half of that might be Jameis.
That's true.
We don't know
that. That's true. I agree.
Regardless, Jameis didn't really mesh with O.J. Howard. He didn't really mesh with DeSean Jackson. Not even really. He didn't mesh with DeSean Jackson. Supposedly, those guys are out there working hard now, but you can't simulate game speed because of something about game speed that threw DeSean Jackson and Jameis Winston off. There was something about the game speed this year.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at the pieces, Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard, you know, Mike Evans, we haven't brought up yet. DeSean Jackson. Running back to me is irrelevant. I really do believe that. Give me a good offensive line, and you give me any running back in the league, and we can rush for 1,500 yards. That's not that hard. Any running back in the league. So to me, I don't think it's that important. I'd rather have a running back that could catch the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah.
And Doug Martin, to me, was liability up and down. I just don't think he's an explosive guy. I don't think he's a hard runner. I don't think he's good out of the backfield. I see these other guys, and they suit the offensive that much better.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can run the football and protect, and it sounds easy, but it's not. Boy, Jameis Winston has the tools to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to do it last year, but the pieces didn't really come together for him to get that
You know
done.
What? Statistically, his completion percentage, his QB rating, his yards per pass, all of those went up. And this is a guy that missed three games and played three games on a bum shoulder.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have seen him with a legit running game. And again, I agree with you. You don't necessarily need the greatest running back in the world. Although, God, imagine this football team with Le'Veon Bell behind it, too. I mean, a three-down back, they can do it all.
Le'Veon Bell has been good for a year and a half. So you get Le'Veon Bell now. What are we going to get him for another half a year of great being great?
No, he's one guy, a stud. I love the guy. I have a man crush on Le'Veon Bell and his game.
Enjoy him.
I understand he's not.
He's going to be gone soon.
The 7, 8, 10-year effective running backs of the old days, they're just not.
No, I mean, don't get three anymore.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The days of the Eric Dickersons, and those guys playing. Frank Gore is an anomaly.
Frank Gore, you know what you're gonna have to do? You're gonna have to put Frank Gore in the Hall of Fame.
You know what? This is a guy who blew out, I believe, his ACL his senior year in college and came back.
Is it 14 straight years of 1,000?
I don't remember, but I mean,
it's
the 12 guy,
or 14 years of 1,000 yards.
The guy,
year.
I'm every year, I'm amazed he's still on a roster. Still, and you look at his stats; it's still effective
on bad football teams. Sometimes still rushing for 1,200 yards. He's just that guy. But the days of the running back, Adrian Peterson's pretty much done.
Right.
Marshawn Lynch is done. He came out, had a great game, but he's done.
Yeah.
Then we talk about Gore. Once he's done, they're not going to have any more Hall of Fame running backs. They're just not. Now, you look at the Hall of Fame running backs, those guys played 13, 14 straight years and didn't miss any football.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Smiths of the world, Marshall Faulk, and those guys. I mean,
yep.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And you know, we can equate a little bit of that to because here's the thing, though. The crazy thing is, Ian, these guys aren't getting 400 carries like James Wilder did. And yet they're still wearing out sooner. And you wonder if that's, you know, it's not necessarily the workload, but the constant pounding they're taking from guys that are, you know, bigger and stronger than they were. I mean,
it's not rocket science, okay? James Wilder ran against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense that, you know, Mean Joe Green was 250.
Yeah.
You know, Elsie Greenwood was 255. Jack Ham was 205. Right. Jack Lambert, 215.
Yeah.
Now you're playing against James Harrison.
Yeah.
Who's 295.
Yep.
That's a problem. You can't take those licks all the time.
Right, right.
Those, you know, Calais Campbell is 330 pounds. You know, Randy White, like Harvey Martin was my favorite defensive lineman growing up with the Dallas Cowboys. 6'5", 250. Cam Newton's bigger than that.
Yeah.
Substantially bigger than that.
Yeah, that is mind-boggling.
It's a different league. It's a different time. The running backs can't last anymore. The defensive linemen are running 4.6s now at 310, you know, pounds.
Yep.
Back in the day, it used to be guys with big guts and they were big slow guys. It ain't like that anymore.
Right.
So the day and age of that is almost done. Now, there's if you guys want to get in contact with me, it's Ian Beckles at radioinfluence.com. If you want to get in touch with me, one of these questions from Alex Hodo was, is our defensive line personnel better set for 3-4? Now, having played against 3-4 defenses quite often, and a great 3-4 defense is substantially harder to deal with than a 4-3 because of the angles and how, and there's not that many teams that run them. It makes it tough, especially for a guard who's uncovered, running after linebackers, fanning out on defensive ends, which you don't really want to do. It's an unnatural thing. But I keep on hearing people say that the Bucs need to switch into a 3-4 defense. They don't have the personnel. They're not big enough. What are you going to do? Put Quan Alexander as an inside linebacker uncovered? Where Lavonte David. Whoever's on the outside, you need James Harrison, not Lavonte David.
They almost have to at least become a multiple look defense just based on the fact that the free agent pass rushers in a 4-3 scheme are not there.
Okay.
All right, they're not going to be there this year. There's no Calais Campbell that's out there. There's no, you know, Simeon Rice out there. There's no whatever you want to say. And the guys in the draft are the same way. I mean, look, Noah Spence is not a 4-3 outside pass rusher. He's just not. I mean, the guy is, you know, he's 245.
I don't know if he's a 3-4 outside pass rusher.
I don't know. I don't know that he is either, because we haven't been able to see him long enough on a football field to know what they have exactly. But I you know, they went to a lot of 3-3-5 last year.
That's a nickel though.
Well,
I'm talking about base.
Yeah, I know as far as base goes.
I've never seen anybody run a 4-3 and switch to a 3-4 in regular down and distance and be good at it, because they're two totally different mentalities.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you can't be one gap then switch to two gap, and then your defensive tackles can't turn into ends. It just doesn't work that way. And we definitely don't have the personnel, defensive line or linebacker wise.
I think linebacker wise, you could get away with it more so than the defensive line right now, because again, where Gerald's going to be your nose tackle? Now you put him at end, and we go back to what we were talking about earlier. His ability to redirect when he gets up the field. Mm. Now you're asking this guy to be able to make that move back to the inside if he gets around on the outside. That's just not his strength or his forte at all.
Agreed. But you put him on nose guard, you're completely wasted.
Well, I mean, he's going to get moved, and he's going to run himself out of a lot of plays. Your nose guard in a 3-4 has to be that Gilbert Brown, essentially, that's immovable, that neutralizes
things. 3-4, you can't run out of anything. You know. The second you try to run out of something, a guard's hitting you right in your chest. Yeah. And there's one thing that I have noticed. He don't like to take a lot of licks.
Yeah.
He goes down a little bit too much for me. Goes down for one play. Well, we don't want to get into that, because that's you get me really riled up, because dogs don't go out.
Yeah,
dogs don't go out. I seen J.J. Watt. When J.J. Watt's on the ground, he ain't coming back.
Yeah,
and that's the way we were back in the day. Now you get hit in the ground, come back in the next play like you're pounding in your chest, I'm heroic. No, actually, that's actually.
And we can pick on one player in particular, but you know what? I've seen that so much in the NFL and on this football team the last few years. We'll be up in the press box. A guy will go down. Scott will be like, we need to get an injury story up as soon as we get an announcement on it. Before we get started writing the story, they're back in the game. I'm like, really? Come on.
I'm telling you, you could go back and look at the film. Yeah. If I go down, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Right.
I love to tell a story. Paul Gruber, in his last game, had a tibia fracture.
Uh-huh.
they call it plateau something, and he was trying to get up. And Dave Moore looked at his leg and goes, you need to stay down.
Right.
Like, that's his mentality. He's trying to get up, but a freaking his leg is disjointed, and that's just the mentality. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So these athletes these days are just definitely a little bit different. So, I mean, so you do social media.
Mm-hmm.
How do people get in touch with you social media wise?
You know, we're all over it. And again, this is not the Trevor Sikkema love fest, but listen, Ian.
I got to get him on, though. I want to get him on.
You and I are old. Mm-hmm. Right? Let's just face it. We're dinosaurs.
We got the grays.
We bringing in Trevor, the young 25-year-old millennial, he drives us crazy.
I love it.
He's an airhead at times.
Mm-hmm.
He can't see the obvious sometimes. But you know what? He thinks like the young kids.
Mm-hmm.
He understands social media. And he's on top of things. You know what I mean? Things that Scott and I, you know, would take an hour to do, he can do in 5 minutes because he's younger, he's mm-hmm. quicker, you know. So we love Trevor, but Trevor's really added a lot to our social media presence. And, you know, number one, we're on Facebook. We'd like to have more people follow us on Facebook, Computer Report. Twitter, we're at almost 29,000 Twitter
nice.
Followers. Really, really great there. Instagram is something we're really boosting up now. We're nearly up to 2,000 followers on Instagram.
Okay.
And so, I mean, there's ways to follow us on social media. We just recently closed our MySpace page. I'm kidding. We didn't have a MySpace page, I don't
about
think.
To say, who the hell
but,
is
I'm
MySpace,
just kidding. Man. You're just joking about that. Although, maybe we should bring it back, Ian, since we're old.
No,
but,
I think we're good.
Yeah,
I never dabbled in MySpace. I
no, that was right when I was... High speed was coming to my neck of the woods, and so I got on it right at the tail end, and all of a sudden Facebook exploded. But anyway, now these young kids, like my son, look, he's like, Facebook's for old people, Dad.
It
you
is
know,
pretty
he's,
much.
He's a Snapchat, Instagram guy. He gets 90% of his news, and he knows what's going on in the world because of that. But anyway, I joke, Trevor's done a tremendous job for us. He's really helped ramp up our social media coverage. But people can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We don't have a Snapchat. We're a little too old
I don't
for
get
that.
It. I don't get the Snapchat thing.
To me, Snapchat's for only one thing.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily know if I want to see O.J. Howard sending me a boot pic. You know what I mean?
I definitely don't.
So, anyway, we'll skip the Snapchat for now.
There you go. So hit them up on Peter Report.
You know, the main thing we want people to do is come to the website. And I know Twitter, and you understand this too, even in the radio business, when you were on every day, well, you are now again, mm-hmm. but when you were doing the sports thing every day, your phone calls, and I've noticed it on sports radio, when I was doing sports radio in the mid-90s at 9:10, I mean, the lines were always lit up. It didn't matter what time of year it was. But now when I go in and do radio things, you know, you don't have to beg for calls. People want to communicate via social media
Correct.
A lot more.
People
you know what
are
I mean?
They're connecting while you're on air sometimes.
Right, right. And you know what? You can have dialogue because you had Twitter. You know, mm-hmm. you would read tweets and things like that and comments on air, but the one-on-one dialogue. And so it's not hurt our business because our numbers are actually going up. Again, last year was a record-setting year for us. This year our numbers are even better than last year through the first month and a half of the year. But there we do lose some to people who just want their headlines in 140 characters,
sure.
you know what I mean? So
sure.
we encourage people to come to the website from time to time because, honestly, that's what pays the bills. Twitter doesn't pay the bills.
That's true.
You know,
that's
Twitter true. Twitter is a necessary evil. We've got to keep up with it because we've got to be current, and it does direct traffic mm-hmm. to our website. But we want people to go to pewterreport.com as often as they can just to check things out. And, you know, we've got a lot of stuff up there. Our website has changed over the last couple of years. We redesigned it. We're looking at, you know, maybe pumping it up and sprucing it up a little mm-hmm. bit more before the football season comes. We're going to be really heavy. Again, Trevor has been a blessing because he and Scott are draft nerds. I'm not as big into the draft.
Are they doing mock drafts ready?
Oh, already. Mocks
shame.
Are up. Mocks roundups.
Shame.
Trevor's on his way. Trevor's leaving Friday to go up to the combine.
Okay.
You know, we were at East West. They were in Mobile. I was at the Pro Bowl. We'll be at the NFL owners meetings. You know, Trevor traveled to most of the road games this year. Again, it's nice having a young guy that doesn't mind jumping
yeah.
on an airplane or driving 12 hours
you
to Charlotte. I'm not doing
do
that.
That
no,
travel,
no.
No doubt.
That couch, that recliner, that beer, and that TV is
it's nice for me
to drive 12 hours to
and
go to Charlotte.
Rewind.
Yes.
You can rewind. It's the best.
The worst view in the house is the press box.
I agree. The worst.
The worst.
I done it, and I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you can't cheer. I'm like, kiss my ass. I wore orange. If I want to cheer,
that's
I'll
right.
damn cheer. That's for sure.
You ought to watch Warren Sapp up when he comes up. A couple times a year, he comes down on the field, and he'll come up at halftime and
oh,
watch part
care.
Of the game with us.
He don't care.
Oh, he does not care.
About anything.
Nope.
It's good.
I love the guy. I love the guy. And again, for the record, I love Gerald McCoy. Yeah, that's all there is to it.
It's a lot of love. That's okay. And I love Hess Spinal Centers. I want to give them love for being our title sponsor. 60 locations, 1-800-618-HESS. Don't stress. Call Hess. Now, I want to get involved with Pewter Report more. I've been talking about this for a while. Like, I used to write for you guys way back in the day. I want to get more involved.
Hey, you
get
know,
the young kid on.
As I'm sitting here, we were definitely going to have Trevor on here. As I'm sitting here looking at this big screen right now, you could help us with the occasional film breakdown.
Absolutely.
We would love to do that.
Sometimes when somebody says to me, hey, you're wrong about Joe McCoy, you're wrong about this player, I'll go, I like to sit down and explain why.
Right.
And you know what? This is what I'm used to. This is what I see. And we should do that. We should do that one time. We got plenty of libations here. I know plenty of people that are bringing some good food.
We'll bring up.
We've got the
NFL all access with the coaches film. We can sit here and click and rewind and get your opinion on, hey, you know, this guy missed this block, or whose responsibility was this, or why did you know Donovan Smith have his feet stuck in the mud here? I would love to do that. We should plan a film breakdown study with Ian Beckles.
We could we can bring in some interesting people.
Yeah.
I could bring in like Al Bubba Baker.
Oh wow,
who had 23 sacks his first year. Like, he doesn't understand anybody that gets 8 sacks. He doesn't get it.
Right, right.
He had 23 sacks. Wow. He said, "I'm rushing the damn passer.
Yeah.
I don't give a crap about anything else." Yeah. Or some other interesting people. You never know. There's a lot of people around here. But, yeah, I want to get your guy on, and we'll definitely just do some more.
Let's definitely do some stuff this year. We'll brainstorm this summer.
Well, there's a lot of things coming up, the combine, free agency, and a lot of other wonderful stuff. And the Bucks hopefully are going to make us some splashes going forward.
One thing I do want to pimp, I'm sorry, it's something we did last year, and we had no idea how it was going to be. We actually did our own live draft feed the entire 3 days of the draft. On a YouTube feed where Scott and Trevor and some different guests, you know, were bantering and commenting live on the Buccaneer picks. And we're planning on doing that again this year. We didn't know if we were going to be able to, if our website was going to crash. We had no idea. I was very concerned about this. It worked out great. We're going to be doing it again. I mean, again, I like watching this year. Fox is actually covering the draft. But I always like watching ESPN and the NFL and the NFL Network doing it. But I mean, for people who are Buccaneer fans, you know, they don't really care who the Packers are picking at 24. You know what I mean? You know, they can go to our YouTube channel and they can watch Scott and Trevor and myself occasionally. You know, talk about things, analyze the players, how they're going to fit real time on how it's going to do, and. Maybe we need you on that, too. That would be interesting. We're going to get you on our podcast. I've been on yours twice or three times now. I'm going to drag you on ours.
All you got to do is ask me, brother.
All right, man.
I'm definitely available. Yep. I've got some time. Just give me a couple days' notice, and we'll figure that out.
Sounds good. Sure. No Sounds doubt. Good.
Well, say hi to Scott for me.
Will do.
Give me the number of this young kid. I'm going to get him on, and everybody check him out at pewterreport.com. I appreciate everybody listening into In the Trenches. Like I told you, we're going to be doing different things every week, but we're definitely going to keep you abreast of what's happening with the Buccaneers and the NFL. Everybody have a wonderful week, and please be safe. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter, at Ian Beckles, for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
I'm excited to welcome to this podcast my friend Tyrus.
I think you have to be a special person to do what we do. And I think it's a disservice if it's not tough, if there's not, when you first get there, the desire for them to see if you have what it takes to stand up. Because honestly, the best thing about Deep South was it prepared me mentally for all of the things that happen outside of the ring. You might be the better athlete, you might be the better talker, you might be the better performer, but if a writer or somebody doesn't feel that way about you, it's not going to happen sometimes. And you have to be mentally tough, because if you're not mentally tough, you're going to fall apart.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.